Hello and welcome to The Preservationists, the monthly radio show for fans of local historic architecture, the history of unique buildings, and the people from our community working to preserve and restore them. I'm Astronomus Ray, the president of the board of directors at Lower Columbia Preservation Society, LCPS, and the host of The Preservationists. Thank you for tuning in. Today, we will be exploring the fascinating history and restoration efforts of the Forstrom home with Lori Sarah Finn, who has been putting in a lot of effort and dedication to restoring this beautiful home. Can you tell me a little bit about what originally brought you to Astoria? Are you from this area?
No, I'm actually not from this area. I'm a retired public health nurse. My husband and I bought the Forstrom house in the summer of 2018 to restore, so we've had it 6.5 years. We were looking for a grand old house in a coastal community and found the listing online. I'm originally from Eastern Washington. I've always liked Astoria. I remember my first visit to Astoria in the late 60s after the Megler Bridge opened. My dad was salmon fishing in Owaka with friends, and we were camping at Cape Disappointment.
So, Lori, when you were originally looking at this house, did you know anything about the history of the Forstrom family at first?
No, I looked at the listing and then went to work, and in 2 hours I had a lot of information.
Can you tell me a little bit about the history of who they were and the significance that they played in Astoria?
Dr. Forstrom was born in Finland in 1867, and he immigrated to Astoria in December of 1905. So he was about 40 years old when he came to Astoria. He was educated in the medical schools of Helsinki, Berlin, and Vienna, and spoke 5 languages. So he was clearly a very well-educated man. I would say that he's one of the most extensively educated surgeon and physician in the region. The medical schools in the United States were not really of real high quality at that time, and the best schools were in Europe. I understand from the family that he was a very generous man and had a very successful practice. He attracted patients from all over the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. There's stories about if you had a hot abdomen, which means you probably have appendicitis, you wanted to see Forstrom because you'd probably live through it. So he attracted patients from all over. His first wife, Allie, was 20 years his junior. They married in March of 1909, and that's when they bought the house. They purchased the house from Archibald Kahn, who was a sea captain. And he was actually the first captain of the Lighthouse Columbia. So she was Regatta Queen in 1914 and was the first queen of Finnish heritage. Probably the first immigrant queen, because she's Finnish also. I think that the house is a testament to the upward mobility of new immigrants, especially the Finns.
Now, you've been working on this huge restoration project with your historical home. What inspired you to originally want to take on this project? Did you have prior experience to restoring homes in your past?
I have always been interested in old houses from a very young age. I think that I started accumulating old house parts when I was about 16 years old. So I was that kind of odd kid. I grew up my entire life knowing that I would someday live in a big old house, preferably a very grand house. So I bought my first house in Seattle in the late 80s and restored it. And it was my first project of my own house that I purchased as a single person. And I actually still own that house, and my daughter lives in it. The Forstrom house is my second project and my last project.
And, you know, one thing that's interesting about the Forstrom home is there's a lot of fascinating stories. So I was kind of curious about what approach did you take to start researching the Forstrom family? Because obviously when you first were looking into this house, you found information almost instantly about it. But you still do research to this day, and you find so many different things as the years go on. So what was your initial approach to wanting to restore this home with knowing the research and the history of it? How does that play a part?
Well, when I first started researching the house and the Forstrom family, which actually are two different things, I used all the usual resources, you know, city directories, Sanborn maps, censuses, going on Ancestry.com, looking for stuff, going on the digitized newspaper sites, just finding everything I could find, throwing it all together, and then figuring out where to go next. My findings about the write-ups that were done for the historic register for our house contained a lot of inaccuracies, and I had to sort through that. What's true, what's not true. And there's a lot more information available now than there was when those write-ups were done. I did my research, and then I wanted to figure out who lived in this house. What were the series of owners? I wasn't real interested in the modern owners because I didn't approve of all the things they did to the house. So I wanted to get the owners like pre-1980. And I looked for their descendants. And it was pretty easy to do that once you find obituaries of individuals, because it lists the surviving family members, and then you go after them. So I talked to descendants of the Forstrums, his stepchildren, his second wife's kids. Forstrom didn't have his own kids. The Fellmans. The Fellmans were a local family. They lived in our house for 1 year in 1911 while the Forstrums were in Portland, while their house on Jerome was being built. They were an incredible amount of really good information. And then the Macys. The Macys bought the house in 1950 from the widow of Dr. Forstrom because he died in 1945.
Through that extensive research and everything, was there any, you know, you kind of mentioned in the past that there were some people that maybe made some altercations, you know, added their own personal flair, as they naturally right. do. How did you go about uncovering some of what the original details were?
Photographs from the family. These are things that you don't find doing your regular research, that you can really only find from people that lived in the house. Then these descendants of the previous owners bring their photographs. They come to the house. You know, they love the project because you're saving the house for posterity. And they bring things and they bring photographs. And it's, I had suspicions, and I could ask them about what rooms were used for and how has their use changed. Was that light fixture originally in the dining room? What's changed? What wallpaper did they put up? These kind of things.
Just to give our listeners some context, what year is that house originally built in?
The history of the house is complicated, and I have found a lot of inaccuracies in the historic register application. So I've got it all sorted out. The house was built as a one-story Victorian in 1894 by some distant cousins of mine. It was actually built by the eldest daughter of D.K. Warren of Warrenton. And so the Warren family owned our entire block of 8 lots. And so we have lot 1 and 2. She got the 2 lots for $1 from the Warren family. And they built the house. So it was a one-story Victorian house, and they kept it until around 1900, and then they sold it to Captain Archibald Kahn of the lightship Columbia. And then he sold the house to Forstrom in 1909. Forstrom kept the one-story structure until around 1916. Then Allie wanted to renovate the house, so they picked up the house, moved it from facing north to facing west, straddled the lot line, and put it on a new foundation, stripped the house of all its Victorian ornamentation. All the Victoriana in the house is gone. They must have had an architect. I think that it might be a well-known architect in Portland that did it, but I can't confirm that yet. They added a new second floor, so it's structurally kind of different than the first floor. The first floor has an older Victorian floor plan, but it was gutted. But they didn't change the rooms because they didn't change the weight-bearing walls. The exterior is Craftsman in style. It's a modified American four-square because it's not a square house. It's rectangular. It's 30 by 60. And there's a lot of really nice features to the house, like bevel glass. There's a lot of mahogany in the front rooms. Forstrom spent a lot of money on the house.
Imaginably, yes. Now, when you're working on the interior part of the home, where do you draw inspiration from? Is there a specific time period that you look at that you try to replicate?
Yes. Okay. I love historic interior design, and I have a great affection for kind of neoclassical Edwardian era. So this is like post-Victorian. You might be surprised, but I'm really not a big fan of Victorian excess. I find it, the gingerbread and all that, ugh, yuck. And yet I don't really like the confines of design of a pure craftsman interior. I find it really confining. So a more neoclassical, post-Victorian style for me is a really good choice. You can incorporate older Victorian pieces because families did have older things that they brought in to a home. And yet you can also bring in some newer pieces into the house, and it works. Personally, I like very elegant, classic furnishings. Mm-hmm. I call my decorating style faded elegance because yeah, that's really what it is. Patina is my favorite color. I don't mind scratches, alligatoring on varnish, cracked walls, love it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is a lot of details in that sense. And your house is very big, you know, there's so much to cover with that. Now, I'm sure there's a lot that you've uncovered with research and stuff and actually working on the projects. But I wanted to kind of circle back to the Forstrom house and, you know, the family. Do you have any favorite stories?
I think one of my favorite stories is from the memoirs of Paul Fellman that were published in a Cumtux about 3 or 4 years ago. And he was actually born in our house in July of 1911 during the Astoria Centennial. Mm-hmm. And so in his memoirs, he states that Dr. Forstrom was a highly successful physician and surgeon. He made a fortune practicing his profession amongst the Finnish population. His wife, Allie, spent it. She spent money like it was water. She owned a Stutz Bearcat, had horses, had their house rebuilt, had the rooms plastered Pacific colors, which I have found, and then had the walls wallpapered. She put on recitals in her home, starring herself before her guests. Once she decided she wanted to be queen of the Astoria Regatta. Votes were derived from purchases of merchandise from local merchants. Dr. Forstrom spent thousands getting Allie elected. We had a picture Allie gave us of herself, all decked out in a queen-like robe, crown and all. Despite these eccentricities, she was good-hearted and most generous to us kids, not having any children of her own. There it is in a nutshell. That's Allie Forstrom.
Yep. Yeah, and you know, Allie Forstrom, she had, you know, such a great deep history, and I know you talk a lot about it, and you've done extensive research on, you know, who she was as a person. And I was kind of curious, do you ever see things like knowing who Allie Forstrom is in the home that screams, that's why she picked it? You know, is there specific designs like wallpaper or colors she chose?
I am putting all that together. I first had to figure out what's original and what's not, and which wallpaper fragments did she pick out. And she actually gravitated towards very, very classical style. Looks like her favorite color was green. I love the light fixtures she picked out, like the wallpaper. She had very good taste, and I try to emulate that. And when I'm doing decorating, one of the questions I ask myself is, what would Allie Forstrom pick? And did this exist during her lifetime? Could she have picked it?
Yeah, that's an interesting thought. But you do your best to keep it more with like the vintage style and everything.
Yeah, well, you've been to the house. The mm-hmm. house is very vintage. I wouldn't say it's a museum, but close.
Is there any specific design styles that you are currently working on with your restoration? I mean, I know, like, what is exactly all being done at this point?
Well, when we first got started, it was major system failure. You know, you can't. First things first, we had a failing foundation. The house was broken up into three pieces. And once the east end of the house was moving up, the west side was moving down, it was being torn apart in the middle. And you could actually go into the attic and you could see how this was happening. I my estimation was the house had about 10 more years before there was some real damage to it. So the foundation was first, because you can't tile, you can't do plaster repair, you can demolish, but you can't build anything. You can't do carpentry. You can't do repairs until the house is fixed. Otherwise, it's lipstick on a pig. And my mantra in old house restoration is do no harm, but also do the job once and do it right the first time.
Yeah.
I don't like to repeat things.
Back in 2015, the roof was restored. So that was
the roof was replaced.
That was already done.
Right.
And then the renovations being done currently is kind of very many different things. Like you're doing the wallpaper and mahogany woodwork. And how is that going? Did you have any previous knowledge about any of these things beforehand? Or, you know, how do you obtain beginning it?
My father was a handyman. My father could do anything. And I saw him do electrical, plumbing, building, adding additions to our cabin. I always felt like if he can do this, I can do this too. And on my first house in Seattle, I gathered a lot of really good contractors that would work with me as a single woman that I could work alongside. And I learned a lot. Right now, I mainly act as a general contractor to this house, coordinating a lot of different laborers and trades. But I'm also working alongside these guys. Most of them are guys.
Yeah.
And of course, my husband's, you know, he's out there too, working. And so that's how we're doing it. And so it's a kind of budget friendly.
Yeah, exactly. Because that's always something you have to keep mindful of with these projects.
Yes.
We'll return to our guest, Lori Serafin, in just a moment. But first, I'd like to introduce my fellow board member, Eric Willer, to tell you about next month's, January's, LCPS Presents.
Hello, I'm Eric Wheeler. I'm a board member of the Lower Columbia Preservation Society. Please join us on Tuesday, January 14th for LCPS Presents, a program on the Finnish national saga, the Kalevala. Our presenter is Greg Jacob. Greg is an Astoria native and is very active in several organizations celebrating Finnish culture and history. Join us for the story of the Kalevala on Tuesday, January 14th at 7 p.m. at the Pacific Distillery on Astoria's waterfront.
Please also be sure to join us for this month's Topics in Preservation. Topics in Preservation happens every third Wednesday of the month at the LCPS office, located on 389 12th Street in downtown Astoria. For more information regarding Topics in Preservation, visit us at www.lcpsociety.org. Reminder, Topics in Preservation is happening this Wednesday, December 18th at 6:30 p.m. We hope to see you there. Now returning back to our guest, Lori Serafin. Lori, while restoring the Forstrom home, have you found anything interesting?
Well, there's the, you know, various wallpaper bits that we find between wall sconces and behind radiators. Sometimes I'll uncover different layers of paint and it's like, oh, that's interesting. I wonder what era that's from. We have found really great stuff in the rafters of the basement ceiling. We have found vitamins to aid in optimizing your sexual function. We have found hair tonic bottles that are all arsenic. And we found a mummified possum.
Wow, those are some interesting discoveries. Now, in this project, has there been any major challenges at all for you?
It's long. It's a marathon. It's not a 50-yard dash sprint. So staying motivated at times can be very difficult. During COVID was very hard. There was a lack of contractors out there. You could not get an electrician because they were all working on school remodels.
Yeah, it seems like that's a long process.
That has been very true in trying to find someone to do exterior paint. I'm just signing a contract this week to do exterior paint this next summer. And I have been talking to this contractor for 5 years.
Yeah. And, you know, that kind of brings me back to, we look at the perspective of time. Mm-hmm. When you originally began this project, beginning the restoration, did you think that it was going to take this long? How has it evolved over time?
My thought was that if I worked on this full time, and my husband also contributed time to the project, 5 years, I think we're going for eight.
For 8 years. Yeah. And what do you envision the final restored Forestrom home to look like? Like, let's say 20 years from now.
20 years from now. I wonder if I'll even be living in it. It will not be a friendly house to age in. I would like to see that the exterior is still doing well, that we made all the right repairs this coming summer, and that's doing well. I would like, if I'm in the house, I'll be maintaining it.
What advice would you give to somebody beginning a restoration project?
I think you need to know your limitations. You need to know how much time you have to devote to the project. You need to know how much funding you have and how much energy you have to put into this, and be very truthful about it. And then go from there. Then you know how much you can hire out, how much you have to do yourself. And if you don't have the skills to do it yourself, you have to learn how to do it yourself. And you can learn that by working alongside contractors or by gathering information from written sources. I mean, when I first started doing this, there was no YouTube. We also have a very great resource here locally, the Lower Columbia Preservation Society.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
For learning skills.
And, you know, you've grown very passionate about this project. And I wanted to touch base about, what's your personal connection with the Forestrom House? And how has this grown? What's the motivation of it all? You know, why is this important to you? And what makes you passionate about preservation?
I've always loved old houses. And I always thought that later in life, I'm 65, that I would be living in a big old grand house and I would be an antique dealer. But I also feel like this was the perfect house for me. As a fellow healthcare professional, I really want to preserve the legacy of the people that had the house. I feel very connected to the Forstroms for a lot of reasons.
Yeah.
And I love his elegant house. Dr. Forstrom's buried at Ocean View out in Warrenton. And I do try to visit his grave about once a year and kind of tell him how things are going. And
yeah.
The house looks good.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. And, you know, one thing that's interesting is looking ahead about the future of the Forstrom House. You're planning on doing the exterior. What does that project look like? Is it in a good condition at the moment, or how does it look?
The first floor is in very good condition because I have been working on it for about 5 years. And my carpenter, John Davies, and I have done a lot of restoration, especially to the south side. That's where we figured out a lot of the history of the house, because we took off the sheathing because it was dust, basically. The first floor is looking pretty good right now. We have some paint to do, which will get done this summer. The basement level's done, and this next summer will be concentrated on the second floor.
Nice.
I will be doing all the windows and the window sash. This is no small feat, because we have 77 windows.
Wow, 77 windows.
Six are interior windows, so I have 71 exterior windows in the house.
That's a big project to take on.
It's a big project. I did 15 windows last summer.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's great. Yeah. I mean, you know, when you think about the perspective of, like, the overall condition of it, is there any, you know, specific, like, condition-wise, what are we looking at with it? Is there any deterioration? How is the overall structure of it? Like, if we look at the windows, is there any, like, damage to, like, rots or anything?
Oh, yes. My husband, that I haven't actually talked a lot about yet, worked in a boatyard in the last part of his career, and he does epoxy repair. He's done a lot of epoxy repair to the south window.
Yes.
Especially the window frames. Any sash on the south side that was rotten has been redone by my window guy in Portland, because we didn't have a lot of local people at that time.
Yeah, and it's a lot of windows, too.
So. It's a lot of windows. Yeah, no, we had windows that, like, I touched them and they fell apart.
Wow.
We had a lot of deferred maintenance to the house. And it's a constant prioritization. What is going to disintegrate this season? Mm-hmm. We have to pay attention to that. And, of course, now things are better. And now we're kind of... The windows that I'm doing right now really are in very good shape because they're north-facing windows or east or west. So,
And that kind of makes a difference in sense of
south-facing windows take a beating.
Mm-hmm. Yep. All right. And then just to kind of wrap things up, is there anything else that you would like our listeners to know about the Forstrom house? Or what do you wish more people knew?
The house is very interesting to me, and I do know that a lot of people that I meet here in Astoria are very interested in the house, and I am amazed at the number of people that have been in the house, know the layout, and know about our secret room, which actually is not a secret room if everyone knows about it.
Right.
We have a bonus room, a secret room that has a hidden door in the bookcase under the stairs.
Oh, wow. So it's actually a under the bookcase.
Yeah, it's like the old horror movies, wow. You know, Young Frankenstein, where you pull a book and it opens. I'll show it to you next time you're over.
Yeah, I need to see it now. And what is that? What's the purpose of the room? Was it an office or did you uncover what it actually was
I
for?
Do not know what purpose the room served. I think that the bookcase thing, my carpenter built those in the 80s, and there was a door originally to that area, so it was probably a storage room of some type. My carpenter has the original door in his shed.
Oh, wow.
I'm going to march over there and get it because I want that door.
Yep, you got to restore it. Absolutely.
I don't know where I'm going to put it, what I'm going to do with it, but I want that door because that's mine.
It needs to be a part of the house.
Yes,
exactly.
It needs to come back to the house.
Yeah. That's amazing. Well, thank you so much for joining me, and I appreciate you telling me all the stories of the Forstrom and your personal project, you know.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you to my guest for this month, Lori Serafin, for sharing about the restoration of the Forstrom home. And thank you for tuning in to The Preservationist. We hope you tune in again next month. The Preservationist airs every third Tuesday of the month at 9:30 a.m. on KMUN. I'd like to give a special thanks to my fellow board member, Lori Serafin, for joining me this month. And also a thank you to my other fellow board member, Eric Wheeler, for telling us about the January LCPS Presents event. Thank you to the team here at KMUN, the staff, volunteers, and members of the Lower Columbia Preservation Society, and a very special thanks to Camila Swerdloff for producing our theme song for The Preservationists. And thank you to all the listeners of The Preservationists. And remember, anybody can be a preservationist. The Preservationists is a production of the Lower Columbia Preservation Society for KMUN, written and produced by Astronomist Ray. Until next time, I'm Astronomist Ray. Thank you for tuning in.